You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from sunny Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim.
Mark, what's going on in the stock markets right now?
It's been a wild week, particularly for those who were skeptical about the market going up. If you recall, last week we were chatting, and in fact, I think the title of our program essentially said the bias was to the upside, and in a way we seem to have repeated or about to repeat or in the process of repeating that April pattern from last year. You know, after the liberation or day sell-off following Donald Trump's tariff announcement, so the market crashed. Didn't crash this time, but it came down, not as much this time as last year, but blasted off again, and this time much quicker than before, in the sense that we, in the S&P, we actually made a new high in the last 24 hours and so, and we didn't see it in the Dow. We saw a different pattern there, but at least in terms of the S&P, we just barreled right back to the upside, and many attribute to the, you know, the hope of what's happening in the Iran confrontation and so forth. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, we've got, like, the Dow Transportation Average, which many people don't talk about. Mm-hmm. According to Charles Dow, the theory of the Dow theory was that you want to see the Dow Transportation Average is doing good. That's a good leading indicator for the market, or vice versa, if it's going down. And for a period of time, the Dow Transports, when you think about it, makes sense, because the people are doing business and shipping stuff, you know, and moving things around, that would indicate stronger economic activity. So anyway, Dow Transports into new highs, along with the S&P being favored by many of the hot stock names, you know, out there, you know, the big Mag 7 type names, which control a big percentage of the S&P, which affects that to a great deal. But we did see a double top in the Dow, which we highlighted on these broadcasts. If you recall, we got the 50,000, and that was before this big sell-off we had. And the Dow hasn't come back as strong because it doesn't have the same components as the S&P with regard to the Mag 7 type names. But still, the S&P is widely followed, and I would say most investors, or many investors, tie their portfolios to the S&P 500. So that was the the big story this week. But, you know, a lot going on with that Dow Transportation Average. And, you know, we have a lot of interesting sidebar stories in terms of what unfolded this week. You know, we can talk about, for example, the 10-year Treasury bond yield, which has been coming down, which indicates, less cost for loans and so forth. And, you know, we want to see the bond market, we want to see bond prices overall reflect, you know, a change in the sentiment on interest rates. So the interest rate picture has been improving a little bit. It wasn't for a while. We had a big surge here in the interest rate picture, and at least in the recent, I would say, days or so, we've had a little bit of a recovery, so to speak. It changes almost day to day, but I guess everybody's holding their breath. There's a FOMC meeting, a Fed meeting, the end of the month, and a potentially new Fed chairman coming in. But I have a feeling, whether it's this chairman or the Powell or the next one, even though I think there's so many other factors involved. We've talked about the other factors, but you may see rates come down, and that could be explosive for the stock market. But the fact that interest rates are not going up here as much as they were recently, I think, is a good sign. So that was going on as well in recent sessions. Crude oil been volatile here, but start to bounce here in the last couple of days. We had a big sell-off, so a lot's tied to what's happening in the Mideast, but I still think overall oil is cheap. One of the reasons we got bullish on oil even before the Mideast war was because it just, in terms of inflation-adjusted pricing, considering what happened to all the other metals and other commodities, it was way too cheap. You know, $60, $70, $80 a barrel, it just didn't make sense in terms of comparing inflation and value of the asset. So that's why we thought it would go up, and I think over time it's going to stay higher. It's still underpriced. You know, when you see where gold has moved, or silver has moved, or palladium, platinum, or copper, and even agricultural products that have taken off. So, I don't think the overall bull market is over in oil, though it may has pulled back. It might pull back a little bit more, but I think the basic bigger picture trend is still higher for the oil. We have options expiration Friday this week. That's tomorrow. So little volatility tied to that. That's sort of, you know, something that, you know, traders keep an eye on. And, we're basically watching the market here move up and I guess holding our breath a little bit to see if this is going to really continue, because so you're already into new highs again, at least in the S&P, and you wonder, you know, what else is next? Is there going to be, you know, we had a sort of a black swan event. We were speculating about a black swan event back, if you remember, in our early commentary in January or so, and sure enough, it turned out to be the Iranian war. So, you know, what could unravel this rally? You know, something happens in the Mideast, which we're not expecting, or something else unexpected unfolds out there. And of course, we have the midterm elections coming up in November. And from a political point of view, you know, the powers that be obviously want to see the markets up, gas prices down, you know, lower inflation, and, you know, whether that'll affect the vote, voting, just to be seen. So much negative. The general press is so biased against Trump and the administration. It's not even a question of bad reporting. It's the question of non-reporting, and it just over the top. You know, you come from a journalistic background reporting. I do to a certain degree as well over the decades, and you know, we're not getting the true story, or we're getting a biased story against him. So we'll see whether voters ignore that, because the legacy press was against Donald Trump for last 7-8 years anyway, yet he was able to prevail. So we'll see whether that happens again in November. The sentiment seems to be that he's going to lose votes in the House and the Senate, and potential impeachment activity could start again among the crazy Democrats in this country. So, you know, that's part and parcel to looking at the markets to see if the markets are anticipating that or discounting that. So, you know, the fact that it's talked about might mean it's not going to happen at all, and it could just be a function of the legacy press putting out a lot of bad stories, as they're very capable of doing, and doing them, unfortunately, way too often. We didn't talk about the metals, except I mentioned they were up. You know, we're still very bullish on gold and silver. I still think a lot more is coming to the upside. I don't think it's all over yet by any stretch, and we'll see how it trades here in the next several months. Retesting the highs or moving back toward the highs is still possible in my work, so I still think a lot is coming there. Equities and metals seem to move together, so with the S&P into new highs, and if the market overall moves higher into the summer or into the fall, then I would think that the metals would participate as well. So I'm just, you know, as a trader, of course, all the comments I make here, you know, we make trades that are, you know, day to day or week to week, you know, and most of the comments here are more near to longer term. But one of the areas that really stood out here in the recent sessions was the communication stocks. You know, a lot of discussion about the upcoming, we don't know exactly when it's going to come, but the SpaceX public offering, we chatted about this a little bit last week. Supposedly it's going to be the largest public offering ever, you know, well over $1 trillion. So that has generated a lot of interest in satellites and into space, And this past week, we saw huge moves in, you know, other companies that are related to satellites or that space, that space sector, you know, EchoStar, for example, Iridium, you know, a lot of companies that have satellite or space connections, AST Space Mobile, a lot of names out there. And, you know, we participated in at least one of those names in our letter to our clients. So that was a big strong point in the market this week. If you had to pick a sector that sort of stood out, was the space related. Now SpaceX itself is not trading and it's not public yet, so we don't know when that's going to come. Some speculate it could be this year, it could even happen next year. It may not happen as fast as everybody's talking, but we know the paperwork is underway or discussions are underway because a lot of chatter about what's happening in the background. And you can give Elon Musk a lot of credit for putting together a huge deal like that. It affects a lot of other companies. You know, a lot of industries benefit from the success of that, of SpaceX and the rockets and communications and satellites, on and on and on, unrelated to whether we're going to Mars right away or not. So it's real, real exciting. And it should be, one heck of a trading stock or opportunity when and if it, not if, but when it does come public. You know, it'll ultimately take over NVIDIA as the biggest capitalization company, when it is trading. So it's interesting times. So that's sort of a, summary picture of this past week.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, we were talking about SpaceX going public. What I've observed, I don't know if this happens all the time, but when I see an IPO go in, the first day, it usually starts off really high. It climbs at a crazy rate on that initial day, and then there's a big drop in it. Is there any way to predict when that might happen, when an IPO goes into effect?
Well, some IPOs don't go so well. I mean, there's recent IPOs that collapsed the day of the offering too. So I can't cite the exact names, but there were a few in the last few months that didn't do so well. They came back eventually. Generally the insiders can't sell. When it goes public, they're locked in for a period of months, usually 6 months and before they could sell. So who's actually driving, the price down? I mean, it's interesting. It could be traders that short the stock. If they can borrow it, that's usually tough to do on an IPO. So it could be, traders that come in, buy big at the opening and sell it and, it just trades down. I mean, but a lot of these markets are so manipulated and controlled, Jim. It's so hard to say who's pushing the buttons. What establishes that opening price? Let's say, the IPO is priced at $50 a share and it opens at $150. I mean, who makes that decision? A bunch of traders at Goldman Sachs? I mean, bottom line is it's a big open question about how these things are priced to begin with when they do open. Of course, we know what the IPO price is because those who are, who have connections with the brokerage firms or clients of the brokerage firms can buy at the IPO price. But some are, I have to back up again. I guess there are some people that did buy at the IPO price who are allowed to sell. So it's not insiders that are selling. It could be those that, got shares on the IPO because of their connections with the brokerage firms taking it public. I believe many of those can take profits when it starts trading. The insiders are restricted. So that volatility to the downside could be those that are just got in who are ringing the register, so to speak. And then from there, it just trades all over the place. But it's going to be interesting. Listen, there's so many examples of IPOs did well, went poor for a period of time, then came roaring back several weeks or months later. So it'd be an interesting observation to see when it does come and how it trades. But it will give the investing public an opportunity to participate along with Elon Musk, as they have with Tesla over the years. So it'll be just like a NVIDIA or an Apple or, you know, other Microsoft, other big name stocks that trade around, that'll give traders a lot of action and opportunity in the markets. And ultimately, will it be added to one of the indexes? So that'll be the other big question. You know, will SpaceX be added to the S&P 500 and be added to the Mag 7, so to speak, to become the Mag 8 type stock? And how that would affect the indexes is also an interesting observation that we'll have to deal with too. But it's just the concept of the whole company, the successes that Elon Musk has had, is really the story, not so much the stock price. I mean, it's the technology that has come out of his engineering is really extraordinary. You know, the rockets that you can watch the takeoffs and the return of the rockets back to the landing pads, which is something NASA was never able to accomplish or never claimed to have done anything like that. So the reusable aspect of many of the rockets that are involved in the program are just really mind-boggling when you watch it.
Although Elon's biggest rocket does tend to blow up on launch, and the last time it lasted a minute, they thought it was a success.
Well, I guess there are failures along the way. Nothing is nothing perfect there. But anyway, that's nothing much more to say. We're just going to have to wait and see when this happens. Is it coming this year? Is it going to come quicker or later? It'd be interesting to see how fast they want to get this thing out and trading.
Yeah, one of the earliest astronauts said while he was sitting on the Mercury launch pad waiting during the countdown, he was thinking, you know, I'm sitting on top of a giant explosive device with a million parts, all made by the lowest bidder.
That's a good one. Was that John Glenn? Who was the first one up? What's his name? I'm trying to remember the first astronaut we sent up. I'm trying to remember his name. Can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember offhand either. I can look it up. I'll have it by the end of the show.
Yeah.
Now, anything happening with copper?
Well, it's been strong. I mean, bottom line, the world realized that we needed copper, and the Freeport-McMoRan, which is, I guess, a good surrogate for the, for the industry, so to speak. I mean, the stock is right at all-time highs here, trading today, you know, within a couple pennies of its all-time high. So then we can look at Southern Copper, which is, I guess, another play in the pure copper play. Not quite at its all-time high, but, you know, inching back toward it. Demand for copper, I mean, this is the big story with silver, too. I mean, all the research that I'm reading is that the huge shortages of silver and the explosive demand and the prices you really see don't reflect really what the potential price is going to be based on the pent-up demand or current demand and physical delivery. And from what I understand, a lot of silver is a byproduct of copper, you know, production too. So, but anyway, the demand for copper has been all part of the, the high-tech industrial revolution here. So bullish looking at the chart. I just see, you know, a correction and heading back up again. So stick with it.
Yes. Alan Shepard was the first American astronaut. He went suborbital, which is the same as those space tourists like Katy Perry and other celebrities who have used they just pop up, they're weightless for about 5 to 10 minutes, and then they come back down. John Glenn, of course.
Yeah, William Shatner was one of...
Yes, William Shatner.
Yeah, William Shatner just did that.
Space!
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He did it with Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
And the Amazon group, right? So, yep. Yeah. We've come a long way in all those decades. Anyway, we're so happy about the moon trip. We talked about this a little last week. Astronauts got back safely. Big disappointment that they didn't land there. Apparently, they're not going to land there for a couple years. And, you know, big question mark in my mind why it took us 50 years to do it. But, you know, I talk about that more privately than on these broadcasts. something quote unquote rotten in Denmark, you know, about that whole 50-year lapse, about why that happened when we had the ability to do it. So we can talk about that more privately. But anyway,
well, I know it's hard to convince it's hard to convince the public the economic advantages going into space have. But it was the space race that drove the downsizing of computers. Because I remember there's a quote from IBM, I think, in 1965, where the president of IBM said there's no need for the world to have more than 5 or 6 computers. And now all of us have.
Really?
How many computers? If you have a phone, you have a computer. I have a computer in front of me. I've got another computer over there. There's 3 sitting over there. And I mean, I am surrounded by computers in my home.
Why was he wrong, huh?
Yeah, exactly. But of course, the head of Ford in 68 said, I can't see a Japanese car company being successful in America.
Right.
I think Honda's still the number one selling car in the U.S. Or Toyota. Could have been surpassed by Toyota. But anyway, a Japanese car. So again, being short-sighted, I don't think is, you know, a lack of imagination or a lack of looking at what the competition can do is a failure.
Right. I believe there's more to it than public's opinion or Congress's opinion to willingness to fund it. I just think there are other things that occurred on that mission that, created a lot of potential controversy. And things that were seen or discovered on the moon, which were not reported, might frighten or disturb the public, is really the point I'm trying to make. So this is something which I can't 100% confirm, though it's anecdotal and it's based on decades of listening to interviews with even some former astronauts. So I just have a big question mark, and I'm awfully skeptical about our moon's moon program, you know, in terms of the timing of it. But I'm glad the astronauts got back safe, and we certainly had some spectacular pictures of the far side of the moon and saw some craters that we've never seen before. So it's it's a step forward, and it's a plus, I guess, for our culture.
I watched the Artemis crew news conference today, and the question I would have been asked was, did you see any signs of alien activity on the dark side of the moon? And if you did see any, would you be allowed to tell us?
What'd they say?
Well, that would have been my question. No one asked that question.
Oh, that's your question.
That would be my question. And of course, they would say no.
Meteorites hit the.
They did see six impacts.
Meteorites hitting the. Yeah,
they saw the sharp, the bright flashes of impacts during their brief. So as you can see, the moon gets hit all the time. No atmosphere to soak up those smaller meteors. So if they build a space station, they better put it underground to make sure that and have a good radar warning system.
I mean, a moon base.
Yes, if they build a moon base.
Yeah,
because... Yeah, particles are coming down out of outer space traveling at hundreds of thousands of miles an hour. The kinetic impact of a piece of dust on that surface would cause a bright flash of just a piece of dust. It's going fast.
Well, same thing was applied probably to a lesser degree on Mars because of the thinner atmosphere there too. So
yeah.
But you definitely I'm sure they would consider all those possibilities. So, but apparently from decades ago, I mean, I'm going back to the 1970s, there were some just from astronomers taking pictures, or I guess amateur astronomers taking pictures of objects on the moon that supposedly were intelligent, quote unquote, intelligent type structures that were there that haven't been talked about. So there's stuff there.
Or maybe humans
been removed.
Yeah, maybe humans were there, or humanoid types from 250 million years ago who were up there, and then something happened to us, or whoever were the intelligent beings from back then. Mark, I know we got wandering into space a little bit, but there's so many opportunities for business investment if you're into the right thing. And of course, the defense industry now, with so many munitions expended in Iran by the U.S. and again in the Iran, the Russia-Ukrainian war, are defense industry stocks a good deal to take a look at?
Yeah, they've been doing well. They pulled off their highs, like Raytheon, which is involved in a lot of the missiles and so forth. You know, hit a new high a couple weeks ago, and is probably within 10 points of its recent high. Lockheed Martin, another big name, McDonnell Douglas, and of course, there's even talk Boeing getting into that business. So these stocks have done well, and they had a little correction with the market. It seems like. These stocks have been in bull markets here for a year or two anyway. So there's a lot of anticipation, particularly since the Ukraine war broke out, in terms of the need for more military supplies. So unfortunately, the markets like war. We've seen this over the decades. It stimulates industry and business. It turned the U.S. economy around World War II. World War II didn't happen, and I don't know when we would have come out of the Great Depression, So, a lot of these things, you could argue, were politically motivated, and the war is encouraged to stimulate business. It's sort of a cynical viewpoint, but we have seen that over the decades. So, but as far as those stocks, they're high compared to where they've been, and I guess long-term plays, these are strong companies and there's a strong military budget. So the answer is yes, but as a trader, you got to find the right entry point.
Mark, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, we didn't talk too much about the geocosmic here. There's just an interesting story tonight coming out of space weather. Apparently, there's a hole in the sun's atmosphere. And people say, well, the heck do I care about that? Well, there's things known as solar flares and so forth. But according to the story, there's a large hole is open in the sun's atmosphere, and it's directly facing the Earth. So the result of that, some high-speed solar wind could be hitting our way here, according to the analysts, around April 18th. So there could be a lot of these G2-class geomagnetic storms. And the new moon will be at... not visible, we won't see the moon, but the new moon will provide some dark skies, so we might see some more auroras and that type of activity in the northern atmosphere. But it's a severe solar wind, or energy, there's always that risk about affecting electronics on the planet, and the old scare about the ultimate repeat of that Carrington event in the mid-1900s always comes to mind when you start hearing about strong solar winds and activity. So it is being reported, something to watch, and we hope that it's not minor, not a major event. So anyway, that's sort of what's new in outside the planet.
Mark, always fun chatting with you.
It always is. Thanks so much, and appreciate discussing some alternate topics. You can look at the stock market all day, but the sun and the moon are still there, So they affect us in ways we can't always imagine.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. You can find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. We're everywhere. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.